after the show.
Who is here? Just you and me and Zach?
No, we have Anne Greenfield, we have Elisheva, we have Heather and Jerry, we have someone else. Not sure who that was. Maybe Naomi? Not sure. I can't see.
Oh, hello.
Naomi? Hi.
Okay.
Hello.
Do you want to see everybody at once? You could put on gallery. It's on the top right corner. It's like 9 squares with each other. And that shows you everybody at once. If you'd like to look at yourself best, you can go over your own thing and over the 3 dots, put pin video. And that's, you're always welcome to do that. Okay. People are still signing in. We can give it a moment or two. Okay. Hello, Jerry.
Hi, Rabbi.
If, Jerry and Heather, the 2 of you can't be on in the same room at the same time. You're going to get feedback. So one of you should just mute yourself if you'd like, and then you'll be fine.
Bye.
I can mute you as well.
Yeah, sad news about Rabbi Morgan.
Yeah, I'm going to mention it now.
How do I mute? Okay.
I can mute everybody. If you'd like, I can mute everybody. What I'm going to actually do is I'm going to mute everybody, and then when you want to talk, just press the space bar, and it will let you talk. It will let you speak, okay?
Okay, that's fine.
Okay, so I'm going to mute everybody here, I think.
I don't have a space bar.
Hover over the bottom.
I won't talk.
All right. I'll unmute you, Zach. Don't worry. Okay. All right.
You can raise your hand.
Yeah. You can always raise your hand. There's a little button there on the bottom that says reactions. And if you click on it, you could give me a thumbs up if you like what I'm saying. Or you can raise your hand if you want to get my attention. Or you can always chat over here and just say hi.
Of course.
Like over there. All right. Okay. So let's begin. Thank you, everybody, for joining us tonight. The first thing I want to mention is, unfortunately, there's a very tragic death in the community today. Rabbi Morgan, who many of us at the Kehillah know, because he used to daven with us, he used to come teach for us in the mornings. He would teach a Gemara shir for a number of people at the shul, and for a number of years, maybe 5, 6, 10 years, I don't know the exact number, others went to hear his shir at Link. And he's been sick with the coronavirus, and unfortunately and sadly, he passed away today. So we should, hopefully this year will be Lili Nishmaso, and his neshama shall have an aliyah. If anybody wants to say anything, you could press your space bar, and it'll let you talk, and you're welcome to do that, okay? All right, so let's begin. The first point that I want to make tonight is a very important point. I think it's a very important point. That's why I'm sharing it with you. Which is simply this. What's the goal of the Seder night? That's my question. What's the goal of the Seder night? And that's obviously a question everybody, you know, has their own perspective on. And I think there's 2 aspects to it. There are the technical goals of the mitzvot, which is, for example, you want to do the mitzvot of the day. What do I mean by the mitzvot of the day? You have matzah, you have maror, there's matzah and there's maror, there's telling over the story, ideally, hopefully, in the best case scenario, to your children, if they're there. There are different mitzvot, right? Phyllis is saying to tell the story. That's certainly the goal. So there's the technical mitzvot, and then they also have what we call, what I'm labeling for tonight, for lack of a better term, even though really it is one of the technical mitzvot, where the Haggadah itself tells us, Chayav Adam Liros Asatzmo Ki Lehu Yatzam Mitzrayim, that a person is obligated to see themselves as if they themselves have left Egypt, which means that it's not something historical, it's not something in the past, it's not just sharing tales of a Jewish history lesson. That's not the point of the Seder. But rather, it's a person somehow or another, through the mitzvot of the day, of the Seder itself, through the telling over of the story, a person is supposed to get to a point where they're experiencing what it's like to be a slave and what it's like to be free. And imagine themselves having gone free. So that by the time they get to the end of the Seder, And they're saying Hallel. It's a personal expression of thanksgiving to Hashem. And that's really the goal. And that is a goal that's not just a technical goal. Obviously, the technical goals are important, the mitzvot are important. But that's the spiritual goal, or that's the holistic goal. That's really what we're going for on Seder night. So I wanted to share with you something that I saw over Shabbos, because I think it's something that will give us a bit of a framework for how to go about doing this. Rav Shimon Schwab was a gadol b'Yisrael. He was a rav in Baltimore for 20 years. He was a rabbi in Breuers in Washington Heights for a number of years. And he was a German Jew who made his way, I can't remember if it was after the war or before the war, he made his way to Baltimore, to the United States, and then to Washington Heights. Rav Shimon Schwab has a sefer on Chumash called Ma'ayan Beis HaShoeva, I think it's called. That's on the Chumash, which is very, very popular. And he also has a commentary on the Siddur, which is available in English from Art Scroll. It's also extremely popular. Rabbi Schwab on the Siddur, it's called. So the Schwab table, their Shabbat table, their table on the Chagim was filled with guests, including Gedolei Yisrael, important Jewish leaders, prominent intellectuals, poor people, simple people. And the conversation was adult. And the children listened in. And they learned their father's personal history. They learned about his various stances on questions of Jewish thought, on communal issues of the day. But the time, and when he had guests over, he wouldn't always necessarily put his children right next to him. He would often put his children, you know, put the guests first and then put the children after the guests. And that was true most of the time. However, at the Pesach Seder, he made a special point to address his children. Seder night, he'd place the children at the head and he made an announcement. He says, I apologize to the guests, but tonight I'm addressing myself to the children. They're the object of the Seder. V'igadta l'bincha. Now, obviously, the elephant in the room here is that many of us, unfortunately, will not have our children at the Seder this year. We won't be with our parents this year. We're going to have a very different kind of a Seder. So that aspect of v'igadta l'bincha, of teaching your children, is not there in that sense. Although Zach had a wonderful idea, which is that you can learn something between now and Pesach, and you can write it up. And you can share it with your children, with your grandchildren, and you give them, you know, the message from Bubby, the message from Zadie, from Grandma, from Grandpa. And it's a message that you want them to read at their Seder, so at least you have a shliach. In a sense, you'll have an agent, which will be your children will be the agents, or somebody at the table will be the agents of sharing the message that you want to share. And in the article here that I read on Shabbos, it mentions that there was one Seder in particular that seared into Rabbi Meir Schwab's memory. Some of you know who Rabbi Meir Schwab is. Rabbi Meir Schwab is the principal of Beis Yaakov of Denver, one of the original popular Beis Yaakovs here in this country. My aunt went there, probably in the 70s, I imagine, something like that. Late 60s and 70s, my aunt was there. And it was a popular destination because it was the only Beis Yaakov at the time that had a dormitory. So for girls who lived in far-flung places, meaning anywhere outside of New York, the only real Beis Yaakov option for them outside of New York was in Denver. So Rav Schwab said, or Meir Schwab says about his father, that it was sometime after the second cup of wine. And some of the children were already a little giddy, laughing a bit more than the sublime nature the night warranted. He turned very serious, recalls Rav Meir. He grabbed hold of his kittel and he said, in this kittel they will bury me. Tonight I'm here to tell you that this story is no myth, no legend. It really happened. If it were the last day of my life, I would tell you the story. Because it is emes, because it is the truth. And it became a very solemn moment, and he returned to his very jovial self after having put the fear of God into us. That's a memory that his son shared. And to me, it just kind of jumped out at me as being maybe the framework that we're looking for, that we're searching for, regardless of whether or not our children are there. I'm not referring to the solemn moment aspect of it, but rather I'm referring to a different aspect of it. He said, tonight I'm here to tell you this story is no myth, no legend. It really happened. How's that for a framework? How's that for a way to look at the Seder? To know that the purpose of tonight is not just to read it like you read Ashrei in the Seder. The purpose of it is not just to read it like you read a novel, God forbid. But the purpose of it is to share truth. And when you're sharing truth, when you're bearing witness, when it's something that's so important to you, then that's something that is so powerful. And it becomes first person. It becomes real. It becomes something that you can connect to. And that's I think that perhaps that's a framework that we can go for. In other words, I'm telling the story, but I'm not just telling a story. I'm sharing my experience with you. Many years ago, I heard an idea from a rabbi, a Chabad rabbi in the Bay Area. He lives in San Jose. He's one of the top mashkichim for the OU. And I apologize, I can't remember his name offhand. But he said, I once asked him, how do you tell a story? Because he was a great storyteller. And he said, the best way to tell a story is you close your eyes and you picture the scene. And then all you're doing when you tell the story is you're describing the scene to the people, because you're the only one who can see it and they can't. So you're drawing a picture for them using your words, and you're teaching them and you're showing them. That's what storytelling is. That's the key to storytelling. Details, description. You know, for many years, Ruvi, I see your question. I'm going to get to it a little bit later, okay? For many years, I would spend time at the Seder really focusing on that aspect of, thank you, Joel. Really focusing on that aspect of the Seder. You know, we how do we begin the Seder? In the beginning, our grandfathers, our forefathers were idol worshippers. Well, that's one way to begin. Another way to begin the Seder is, Avadim hayinu leparo b'mitzrayim. We were slaves to Paro in Egypt. So in order to understand that, first you have to understand, what is a slave? What is a slave mentality? What does a slave look like? What kind of freedom of choice does he have? I heard from Rabbi Dr. Pelkowitz recently, quoting Rav Charlap in his Haggadah Meimorim, which is actually our primary source for tonight, where he says that slaves don't have the power of speech. They don't have freedom of speech. It's not just they don't have freedom of speech, where they could protest and they could put on hafganah, they can strike, or they can say what they want, they can print what they want. No, it's much more than that. They're too exhausted. They're too caught up in survival. They're living constantly in some sort of in a crisis mode. And we'll talk a little bit more about that later. So that they don't have the power of speech. It's not they don't have the freedom of speech, but rather they don't have the power to speak. And what is the purpose of Seder night? It's Haggadah, it's speech. Because that's the ultimate expression of freedom. The ultimate expression of freedom is to speak, to share, to tell, to gather together, and to have that freedom. And not just the freedom, like I said, but to actually have that power. So that's something that I used to focus on. What does an eved look like? I remember when I was in seventh grade, I'm pretty sure my teacher in Torah Seventh got in trouble for this. He showed us an old television show called Roots. You may remember it. And you can YouTube it. You could just type in Roots Kunta Kunta or Kunta Kunte. Joel, you probably can know the name exactly. And there they ask him, he was a slave. He had just been captured. Obviously, he was fictional, but they had just been captured and brought to the United States, and he was sold as a slave, and his owner gave him a new name. I don't remember exactly what the name was. Let's say it was John. And they hung him up by his arms and off the ground, and they asked him, what's your name? And he said, Kunta Kunte. And then they whipped him every time until finally at the end, you know, he said what they wanted to hear, which was, my name is John, taking away, stripping him of his identity. That, I think, for us, perhaps some of us, that's an image of slavery that we can kind of relate to, because it's something that we've seen often enough, at least on a screen. Obviously, there's other kinds of slavery even nowadays, but I don't know that you necessarily want to get into that, your Seder. Okay, so let's take a look at the Haggadah itself. We're not going to cover everything tonight, but we're going to cover a couple important and interesting points. The starting point of the Haggadah that I want to mention tonight is Kiddush. Kiddush. When's the last time you went to a Seder, a Shir about the Seder, and heard something about Kiddush? But if you read the Kiddush carefully, there's something very powerful over there. And this speaks again to the truth, and to that it's not a legend, it's not a myth, and it's not just Jewish history, but it's actually relevant even today, and it's about our relationship with Hashem. So if you look at the Kiddush says the words that we say all the time. What are those words? And we say this in davening as well. Asher bachar banu mikolam. God chose us from amongst the nations of the world. V'ramamanu mikol lashon. And he lifted us up from every tongue. The commentaries say that means that he gave us Lashon Kodesh, which is God's language, the Holy Tongue. V'kidishanu b'mitzvosav. and he sanctified us with his mitzvahs. This is three phrases that we're familiar with. We say them all the time. We say them on Shabbat. We say them on the Chagim. The Bacharbanu Mikolamim, Mikolam, God chose us from amongst the nations of the world. Ra'amanu Mikolashon, V'kidishanu Mitzvotav, and he sanctified us through his mitzvot. This yesod, this foundation that God chose us is one that is a pivotal and important and fundamental foundation of the Seder. There's a very interesting pasuk in Yechezkel. Pasuk in Ezekiel says, I will be the God, Hayisi lahem lelokim, Hemi yulila'am, and they shall be my people. I will be their God, and they shall be my people. So Rav Charlap, and that's the Haggadah that I used in preparing for tonight's class, Rav Charlap was, I think, one of the principal students of Rav Kook in Eretz Yisrael in the 1920s and 30s. So he says something which I found to be fascinating. Prior to Hashem choosing us as a nation, the Jews were like any other nation around. However, Hashem chose us. What do we say in the Haggadah? Mitzchila ovdei avodah zarah haya avoteinu. Originally, we were idol worshippers. And that's really a reference to Terach, to Abraham's father. Be'achshav, and now, karveinu hamakom le'avodato. God brought us close to his avoda. Again, that's what we say in the Haggadah itself. Originally, we were Ovdei Avodah Zarah, we worshipped idols, and then God brought us close to his service. What is our praise? What's our glory? What gives us our identity, our Jewish identity? The fact that Hashem chose us. Hashem had tremendous chesed, tremendous kindness, and he did us a tremendous favor. He chose us from amongst the nations of the world. God chose us from amongst the nations of the world. That is the greatest chesed that God ever did for us, was that he chose us. Asher bachar banu, that God chose us, mikolam. He could have chosen any nation to be his people, and yet he chose us. There's a beautiful pasuk in Devarim, and I want to share the series of pasukim with you, and for this I'll share my screen with you so you can look at it inside while I read it. In a moment you'll be able to see my screen, but you'll see my notes over here. Okay. So this is in Deuteronomy chapter 4. If anybody wants these notes, you don't have to write everything down tonight, Zach. I'm happy to share my notes with you. Obviously, what I say and what the notes I'll give you, will be, the two together will be the full shiur. So this is in chapter 4 of Devarim, where Moshe Rabbeinu is giving a history lesson, if you will, to the Jewish people. But he's also establishing their connection and their relationship with Hashem. He says like this. You have but to inquire about bygone ages that came before you. From the time that God created man on earth, from one end of the heavens to the other end of the heaven, has anything as grand as this ever happened, or has its like ever been shown? So here he's setting the stage. Here he's setting the stage for Jewish history. What happened? Those of you just joining, this is HaKadosh Baruch Hu. This is Hashem who is choosing the Jewish nation. And that's what we're talking about in Kiddush. Asher Bachar Banu Mikol Am. Hashem Ha'om Kol Elokim. Has any people heard the voice of a God? Midaber mitoch ha'ish kasher shamata ata vayechi. Has any people ever heard the voice of a God speaking out of a fire as you have and survived? Obviously, that's a reference to Matan Torah, to the giving of the Torah. And here's our critical pasuk. Oh, Hanisa Elokim, has any God ventured to go? Lakachas lo goy mikerev goy, to take for himself one nation from the midst of another nation. Bimasot beotot uvmotim, with tremendous miracles, signs and portents, meaning that they are predicted by Moshe Rabbeinu. Uve milchama, through war. Uve yad chazaka of Ezra Netuya. This is obviously something that we talk about at the Seder. With God's mighty hand and the outstretched arm. Uve mora'im gedolim, with awesome power. Kichol asher asa l'chem Hashem l'kecha mitzrayim l'enecha. like everything that Hashem did for you before your very eyes. Ata hareis aladas ki Hashem hu Elokim eino milvado. Has been clearly demonstrated to you that Hashem alone is God. There is none beside him. Meaning the Egyptians, they said, oh, we have our gods. And they said, our gods are going to compete with your God. And obviously, there's no competition, nothing to talk about. Because he loved your fathers, it's a reference to Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. Vayivcha bezar acharav, he chose their heirs after them. He himself in his great might led you out of Egypt. For what purpose? To drive from your path nations greater, more populous than you. To take you into their land, to assign it to you as a heritage, as is still the case. Know therefore this day, and keep in mind, that Hashem alone is God in heaven above. That should sound familiar to us. We say that in Aleinu. And therefore, b'shamartas chukav, that Hashem alone is God everywhere in the universe. Therefore, b'shamartas chukav es mitzvotav asher anochi mitzavcha hayom. Therefore, I want you to keep Hashem's mitzvot, that which I'm commanding you today. Asher yitav lecha, that which will benefit you, levanecha acharecha, your children after you. Leman tarech yom al adama, that will give you arichat yamin, that will help you live a meaningful life. Asher Hashem elokecha noten lecha kala yamin, that Hashem has given you for all time. These psukim are awesome. These psukim are essentially a beautiful summary of that which we're speaking about. Hashem choosing us as his nation. Says Rav Charlap, when we say Kiddush, what we're saying is Hashem chose us from among the other nations of the world. Hashem lifted us up. Hashem gave our lives meaning. Hashem gave our lives purpose. And it's through his mitzvot that we connect to him. And that's what the Kiddush is saying. And that's what our emuna is. And that's what our faith is. It's not something that's just a story about something that happened way back then. I remember many years ago, my mother sitting far across the table from me here. And she's my live audience of one, in addition to the 20 or so that we have here. Thank you so much, everyone, for joining us. I remember many years ago, my paternal grandparents, Bobby Lee, for Hanukkah, she got us these books. I think it was for Hanukkah. She brought us these books. They were Bible tales by Hanna-Barbera. Do you remember that? And it was kind of... my mother says she must have thrown them away. But I remember reading them. I was like, Samson and Delilah and Rebecca and Jacob, you know, etc. I remember saying, like, you know, even back then, it just didn't sit right with me. Why didn't it sit right with me? Because it took Tanakh and it turned it into a comic. It took Tanakh, it took Jewish history, not Jewish history. It took the foundations of Judaism and turned it into a comic. Now, I'm not saying there are different ways of course, there are many ways of teaching Torah. But I remember even at the time that it didn't sit particularly well with me, even though I was a child. I was like, no, this is not the Torah that I'm learning in school. Now, obviously, she meant well. But there was something that I found very, very strange. When we're giving over the story of Yitzhak Mitzrayim, of the Exodus from Egypt, and Hashem choosing us as his nation, we're not channeling Hanna-Barbera. It's not a fairy tale. It's not a myth or a legend of old. It's a fact. It's part of our history, but it's part of our present. It's our reality. It's our connection to God. And that's the goal for the night, is so it's real. That's the framework. That's what we're going for, to be as real as possible. And I think that's the idea that Rav Charlap is saying. So Joel has a question. Joel's question is, don't we say this Kiddush for every Shabbos and Yom Tov, or the Shalosh Regalim, the three holidays? Yeah, we do. Especially Shalosh Regalim, Asher Bochar Mikol. We do say it by all the Shalosh Regalim. That's because it's all real. That's because it's real. Sorry, I'm distracted by Myrna's question. Myrna, if you want to explain yourself a little more clearly, I can send him a message. You may also be able to send him a message privately too. You can try that. Pesach is Pesach, Sukkot is Sukkot, and Shavuot is Shavuot. And each one has their own messages. But in terms of understanding that message and how, and its relevance to the Seder, that's really what we're going for tonight. Okay? So that's step number one. The fascinating thing here, and this is the takeaway, is Hashem started the process here. We didn't start the process. Hashem is the one who started the process of us being his people. It's true. He chose us because he loved the forefathers, and they started the process on their end. But with regard to the Jewish people as a nation, while we were in Egypt, we were not successful. The majority of the people were Ovdei Avodah Zarah, they worshipped idols. So why did God choose us? He chose us. It wasn't that we chose him. Yeah, it's true. At Matan Torah later on, he asks us, do we want the Torah? And we accept it. So yeah, because it's a relationship. There's a give and there's a take. But the starting point of that relationship is that Hashem himself chose us. And that's something to be mindful of. Because again, what is one of the primary themes? We've spoken about this many, many times in the past for the Seder too. One of the most important themes of the Seder is emunah of Hashem. It's coming to believe in Hashem. And you do that through telling the story. We're going to go to Halach Ma'anya. Halach Ma'anya is one of the openings of the Seder, of the Haggadah, of Magid. And if you have it open in front of you, you're welcome to look at it. I'll share some of my screen for a moment, just so you can see the language here. Okay. Halach Ma'anya diachalu avasana be'ara de Mitzrayim. This bread, Anya, we'll leave the word Anya untranslated for a moment. If you know the translation, you can put it into the chat if you like. The Achalu Avasana that our forefathers ate, where did they eat it? Ba'ara de Mitzrayim, in the land of Egypt. Now, if I were to ask you a question, the first time the Jews ate matzah was when? You can press the space bar and unmute yourself if you'd like to. When is the first time the Jewish people ate matzah? Most people would say, yeah, it's written in Aramaic, thank you, Joel. Most people would say the first time the Jewish people ate matzah is when they didn't have time for the bread to rise. Isn't that right? You can just nod along if you think that's true. But we didn't read that. We just said something very different now. The Halach Ma'anya, this is the bread of Anya that our forefathers ate, Ba'ara de Mitzrayim, in the land of Egypt. Kol dichvin yesev yechal, anybody who wants to should come and eat. Kol dichvin yesev yivsach, anybody who needs should come and share the Karban Pesach with us. Hashtahacha, or Hashta Avdi, Lashon Haba B'nei Chorin, I don't have the whole language here. Now we are servants, but in the coming years we'll be free. Hashta Hacha, this year we're here, Lashon Haba B'Aradi Yisrael, next year we'll be in Israel. So this is obviously one of the most famous quotes from the Haggadah, from the Seder. So, first of all, what does Anya mean? What is matzah? If I were to say matzah, what kind of connotation does it lend? Is there a connotation of the bread of affliction, which is what Halach Ma'anya means? When I say matzah, does that remind you of freedom? So is matzah the bread of slavery, or is matzah the bread of freedom? The answer is yes. It's both. It's both the bread of freedom and the bread of slavery. Why is it the bread of slavery? So Rav Charlap says something that I never saw before. I always assumed it was the bread of slavery because the Jewish people in Egypt didn't have time for bread to rise because they were slaves. And how much time did they have to spend cooking? So they mixed a little flour, a little water together, and then they baked it. So they had matzah. By the way, just parenthetically, especially if you're, the Yemenites, their matzah is kind of like a pita-like or a laffa. It's not unlikely that the Jewish people in Mitzrayim ate that kind of bread. That's Middle Eastern bread for thousands of years. They have these ovens, Afghani ovens that they make the laffa in. But again, they're not eating, big challahs like us, like Europeans. So I always thought that's why it's called Halach Ma'anya, the bread of affliction, because they didn't have time for it to rise properly. But Rav Charlap says something very different. Okay. Rav Charlap says this is the bread they gave the Jews in Egypt. Why? Because if you want a slave to stay a slave, keep him hungry. It's when people start to feel full, when people begin to feel full, that's when their mind becomes a little bit more free. And that's when they start to have rebellious thoughts. So the systematic slavery that the Egyptians had to keep the Jewish people enslaved, part of it was to deprive them of food, to deprive them of nourishment. I was recently reading something about this, you know, the Civil War, Civil War era. It was a book about Civil War era, and there was a description of the, they weren't slave laborers, they were paid, but they were basically foreigners who were working on the railroads at the time. And they suffered terribly from scurvy because they didn't have enough fruits and vegetables, because the people that were manning the budgets, if you will, for the train workers, you know, tried to get off as cheaply as possible. When you're trying to maintain order, in this case, it backfired on them. Obviously, they weren't healthy. But in Mitzrayim, they were trying to maintain order and keep the people enslaved. Says Rav Charlap, that's why they gave them the matzah, the lechem oni. That's what the Torah refers to it. It's Deuteronomy 16:3, Devarim Perek Tazayin Pasuk Gimel, where the Torah refers to matzah as lechem oni. So that's the first connotation with matzah. The second connotation is one that we're much more familiar with. They didn't have time for the bread to rise when they left Mitzrayim. And since they didn't have time to rise when they left Egypt, obviously leavening only happens when one tarries. So listen to this incredible idea from Rav Charlap. There are two interesting things here. In order for matzah to become chametz, in order for flour that comes into contact with water to become chametz, what is the key ingredient? What's the key ingredient? The key ingredient is time. If you sit around and do nothing, after the flour comes into contact with the water, it automatically becomes chametz after 18 minutes. Automatically becomes chametz after 18 minutes. What's the key ingredient? The key ingredient is time. Time is what makes flour and water into chametz. Time is a commodity. We know that. Time is the only thing that you can never get back. Time is a commodity. Time is something that has extreme value. To be a master, a mistress, to be in charge of your own time is to be free. To not have time, to have somebody else telling you what to do, when to do, without and make someone else making your own schedule for you, that's not being free. You know, one of the reasons why kids love the summertime, at least the first couple of weeks of summertime until they get bored, is because all of a sudden they're masters over their own time. When they're in school, they're told exactly what to do, when to do, and how to do. But time has that aspect of freedom to it. There's obviously a correlation here between time and being free. That's kind of my addition here. Rav Charlap says it a little bit differently. There's something called Zman and something called Lemala min Hazman. Zman means you're bound by time. Lemala min Hazman means you're not bound by time. To be above time, to rule over time, so time doesn't rule you. The truth is, I'm not sure exactly what Rav Charlap is saying, but this is how I understand what he's saying. In halacha, there are different examples of it. I'm not going to go into the one that's kind of the most obvious. It's not necessarily appropriate for right now. But let's put it this way. If a child is born in Nisan, okay, the 7th of Nisan, let's call it. So a child is born on the 7th of Nisan. And then the child turns 12 years old. Okay? So how many months are left to his bar mitzvah? 12 months. What happens if on the 4th of Nisan, I don't know if it can happen that way, so let's say on the 29th of Adar, the Beis Din, the Sanhedrin decides to add a month to the calendar year to guarantee that Pesach falls out in the spring and Sukkot falls out in the fall. What if they did that? How many months will you have to wait between his 12th birthday and his 13th birthday? 13. That's being a master of time, where we dictate time rather than time dictates to us. Says Rav Charlap, chametz comes because of tarrying, because of delaying, because of waiting. When the Jewish people left Mitzrayim, even though they left in a hurry, but ultimately that freedom is expressed through the fact that they become the masters of time. You ever hear the expression, he's got all the time in the world? When is that usually used? There's a certain fellow who I call him every once in a while. And then what my expression about him, I don't share this with anybody, I'll never tell you who it is he's got all the time in the world. Why? What do I mean by that? You all know what I mean by that. Talks. He's got all the time in the world. So, what is matzah? What does the Gemara in Pesachim teach us about matzah? Lechem, it's bread. She'onin alav dvarim harbe. That you can have all the time in the world and talk. That you say many things about it. She'onin alav dvarim harbe. You respond. You answer. There are many, many words that are said over the matzah. So it's true, we're eating matzah, which is flat, which is not chametz. But what's the idea? We're choosing, obviously Hashem tells us to eat matzah. What's the idea? The idea is that while we're avadim, while we're slaves, we're still very much stuck within time. However, and that's why we say, halach ma'anya, listen carefully, here's where it all comes together. Halach ma'anya, that bread of affliction that our forefathers ate in Mitzrayim. Hashta avdi, now we're slaves. Let's put those two sentences together. Meaning, before we reach the level that we're going for, while we're still slaves, while we're in this process during the Seder of experiencing what it means to be a slave, right now matzah is lechem oni. It's lechem anya. Which kind of lechem anya? It's lechem anya. It's the poor man's bread that our forefathers ate in Egypt. And therefore we say, now we are slaves. Those two sentences go together. However, what do we say at the end after we talked about what do we say at the end of the paragraph? L'shana haba b'nei chorin. Next year we're free. Then we're going to really be masters of time. And that's when the kedusha, the sanctity of the matzah, which is not bound by a framework of time. And then it becomes not lechem anya, but lechem oni. Not the poor man's bread, but rather the bread over which many things are said. As long as we are slaves, we're not yet above time, we're satiated with the initial reason that this is the bread of our forefathers that they ate in Egypt when they were slaves. Next year, though, we're b'nei chorin, when we're free. At that point, we're above time. And that at that point, the matzah becomes lechem oni. So therefore, we say, halach ma'anya, diachala avasana ba'arda mitzrayim, hashta avdi, those two sentences go together. But then we say, l'shana haba, the goal here is to become free. That's the goal of the Seder night. And at that point, the matzah becomes lechem she'onin alav dvarim harbe, the bread over which we speak a lot because we're in charge of our time. This is the idea, the primary idea that I wanted to share with you. I mean, obviously, it fits into our miskeret, it fits into our framework. But what is our framework here? What was our goal here exactly? Our goal here was simply this. This is truth. We're not storytelling. Yeah, we're storytelling in the context of let's get into the details. It's much more than that. It's not just storytelling something that was. It's not a myth. It's not a legend. It's not a Hanna-Barbera cartoon. This is life. This is real. This is MS. This is our story. And this is when Hashem chose us to be his people. And then, of course, the end is, what does it mean to be Hashem's people? It's to do Hashem's mitzvot and to connect him in a meaningful way. If anybody has any questions, I will unmute you. I thank you so much for joining us tonight. A very nice crowd, Baruch Hashem. It was really a pleasure to see everybody. Some new people, some people that have participated before. It's possible the next Sunday night will continue. It depends on what's going on in the world at that time. And I thank you so much for joining us. If anybody have any questions, you can raise your hand by pressing on reaction on the bottom of your screen there. And I'll get a notice that you're raising your hand. Otherwise, you...
Rabbi?
Yes, go ahead, Jerry.
Rabbi, I have a question. You know, from a kid until relatively recently, I understood that the plagues were there to punish the Egyptians. And then I read that the plagues, in effect, were there almost equally to teach the Egyptians that their gods were meaningless and that our God had all the power. Mm-hmm. Could you not argue, picking up with where you started, Mr. Ure, could you not argue that teaching the Egyptians the plagues taught the Israelites the power of Hashem, so that when he chose them, they understood exactly the strength and the power of the God that they taught.
Hey, that last sentence one more time. Could you not argue that what?
Could you not argue that the plagues also taught the Israelites the power of Hashem, so that when he chose them as the chosen people, they understood just how powerful the our God was, and just who they had protecting them.
It's actually a pasuk. The pasuk says that the makos are referred to by the Navi as nigo virifo, which means that it actually has this double-edged nature to it. Let me see if I could find you the source quickly. But nigo virifo, what does nigo virifo mean? Nigo virifo means that exactly the point that you're making, which is, yeah, it was a nega. It was makos. It was plagues against the Egyptians, punishing them. Absolutely, 100%. On the other hand, how did Hashem choose to punish them? By demonstrating his mastery over creation. If you look carefully at the makos, I've shared this in the past, but if you look carefully at the makos, it's a fascinating thing, which is. Dam tzvardeh kinim arov. So dam is blood, kinim is lice, which is made from the sand. Arov is wild animals, dever is a plague that affects the domesticated animals. Shchin are boils that affect the people, it's made from ash. If you think about, et cetera, right? The arba b'seir locus. If you think about the whole hierarchy of creation, from the dirt and the water to the skies, to gases and oxygen, amphibians, to insects, to wild domesticated animals, wild animals, people, you name it, vegetation. Every single bit of creation is manipulated and modified by the Creator. If Hashem was only about choosing to punish the Egyptians, he could have done so in many ways. He could have brought a flood. He could have done all kinds of things he could have done. But how did Hashem choose to punish the Egyptians? Specifically by utilizing his master of creation. Mm-hmm. And that's something that, again, that's that idea, for sure. That's that idea. This is true at many deep levels, but that's the short answer. The short answer is yes, I agree with you 100%. And again, that's one of the goals of the Seder night. It's about Emunah, is to teach our children, to remind ourselves that we believe that Hashem is in charge of the world. Go ahead, Zach.
Rabbi, on your halachma, which was very good, I thought, by the way.
Thank you.
You said that at the beginning it's lechem oni, and then you said at the end it's lechem something else. What did
lechem she'onin alav dvarim harbe, bread over which you say many things.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome. I think that's Linda. Is that Linda? I'm not sure who that is. I just texted you privately. Yeah? Did you want to ask something?
Yeah.
Go ahead. I can't. Is your microphone working? Because I don't hear you.
Talk, Linda. Talk.
You can also text it to me if you like.
Her microphone is off. Okay, your microphone is on. Speak, say hello, Linda. No.
Okay, it doesn't matter. I texted her privately. She's welcome to respond by text message. If anybody else has any other comments or questions, Jobana Soto, don't know if you're pronouncing your name correctly. Thank you for joining us. Samantha B, thanks for joining us. And Eli Moshe, David's mom. Lisa, thank you so much for joining us. Go ahead, Clark, you have a question? Or are you just giving me a round of applause?
He's giving you a round of applause.
Oh, thank you very much, Clark. Okay, I wish you all a wonderful night. You're welcome to reach out to me to ask anything you may like to ask. We will Tuesday night is another lecture, but that's on mental health and this and the situation. And you're all welcome to join that as well. Okay, thanks for coming. Laila
Tov. Thank you,
Rabbi. Thank you.